Blog Talk Radio.
Hello there and welcome. It's the brand new version of Progressive News Network. I'm your host and news director, Richard Spezak. Like the song says, there's a better world coming. You know, if all you saw was the newspaper and all you heard was the news on TV, you might be a little depressed, my friends. But the good news is there are people just like you doing good work. Doing good work every day. And there's a better world coming. People like you and me are building it every day. Progressive News Network is a station dedicated to making sure that progressive voices are heard. Progressive voices from across Florida, from the Keys, from the Panhandle, from the East Coast, from the West Coast, from the inlands to the highlands, from the pine woods to the sandy shore. Good people all across Florida are involved. They're working on women's issues. They're working on family issues. They're working on educational issues. They're working on human rights issues. And there's good organizations, environmental groups, justice groups, peace groups. You've heard many of them already on our air. I can tell you right now that there's more coming. We're going to have some people calling in today. We've got Jay Alexander, who's going to be talking about a whole brand new version. A brand new version of the CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps. Jay's working with some people who are trying to make that possible. We'll beat them on the land, in the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world coming. Yes, my friends, there's a better world coming. You may have heard some of the interesting news. Yesterday, the Washington Post reported that the conciliator-in-chief, that community activist, constitutional scholar, has allowed his White House to leak that he's ready to make a deal, put in some cuts in Social Security. Well, it's not for sure yet, but that's what they're saying. So we'll see, friends. If you don't call the White House, if you don't call your congressman, if you don't call your senator, you know what? Then the only voices they're going to hear are those lobbyists that pay their money, that take them out to lunch. So maybe you should call. Thanks a lot. That was Better Worlds A-Comin', a fine, fine old Union song. Now, many of you know that Awake the State's still going on, friends. The teachers just had a national conference. NEA had a national conference, and Florida's teachers were proudly represented by fine educators from the state of Florida wearing a big, bright pink shirt that says, "Give Rick the Pink Slip." And they're talking about that corporate governor of ours, Mr. Scott, and oh, how strange a place they have made it, him and his boys. So, yeah, and the girls too. Let's not forget Pam Biondi. Yeah, so among the many issues that are facing our fine state, they're trying to give away the state. They're trying to sell it off. And ladies and gentlemen, I think we've got our first caller. Let me bring in one of our guests who's going to be talking about the Civilian Conservation Corps. Hello, sir, and welcome.
Hello.
Who do I have here, sir? Can you speak up a little bit?
Yeah, this is Faye Cunningham.
Hi, Faye, welcome.
I'm in Denver, Colorado.
Well, welcome from the Mile High City down here to the coastal shores. So I'm told by Mr. Alexander that you are a veteran of the CCC, sir. Could you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure can. I lived in Michigan, Lansing, Michigan. I graduated from high school in 1939, January, actually. No work, no available, no money to go to college. I went postgraduate first semester in high school, yet. They had courses in those days like that. And until I turned 17, and then I joined the CCC. The CCC was a program set up by Roosevelt, his very first one, actually, to help try ameliorate the depression. And it was for boys 17 to 22 or 3 or something like that, but most of them were 17, 18, 19. And we worked in national forests, national parks, state parks, state forests, soil conservation camps, all kinds of places that where the infrastructure needed work. And it was a very good program. We got $30 a month. While we were in camp, it was administered by the Army. We had some Army discipline, but we had good food, and we were turned over to civilian foremen for the jobs that we were working on. I was in a soil conservation service camp, and I ended up, after about 3 weeks, as a crew chief of a timber cruising crew up in Wisconsin.
Basically, hey, let me ask you to hold just for a second. I want to bring Jay in. He's arrived.
Sure. Good.
Welcome, Jay.
Hey, glad to be here.
Yeah, I want to welcome Jay. Jay, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and tell us how you got involved in this. We've been talking to Faye for a minute, so we go from Faye to Jay. Jay, give us a little background on this, buddy.
Okay. When I got out of the service in 1990, I worked at a park in the state of Pennsylvania called Raccoon Creek, and it was located 25 miles southwest of Pittsburgh near the International Airport. And I gave nature walks and talks to the people there coming in to visit the park, underneath the jets going, you know, the landing strips were like about 5 miles away. So it was a roaring, roaring good time that summer. It was a summer job that I would never forget because the place that I was working at was built by a strange set of blocks I saw. It said CCC on them. They were carved in the stone, really chiseled really nicely. And there was a spring house that was built that said Fountain of Youth on it, and full of beer, Iron City beer cans, you know, from people that are going there and partying. And and then down the some of the trails, some of the side trails, you could see the old privies, and they were stamped with CC can, with a CC number on it, CCC, and then the camp number. And another stamp was WPA. And so I asked my boss what those meant, and he said, "Oh, those are the people that built the camp back in the 30s. That was the Civilian Conservation Corps, and they worked along with the WPA, which was the Works Progress Administration." And so, I did a little bit of study on the backgrounds of the CCC and the WPA, and I was thinking that just fresh out of the Army, this would be a nice alternative to the military, and also this would help keep parks like this going and help our natural resources. There are trees, there's farms, there are tree forests that were planted by the CCC 70-odd years ago, or 80 years ago, that are growing up tall and straight and in neat rows. And I often wondered about that. So over the years, I've been advocating for the CCC, and I have past couple years started a website called We Can Take It, named after the motto of the Civilian Conservation Corps, and starting a 501(c) nonprofit of the same name, and hopefully we could get people to call up their congressman and congresswoman and get this bill that's in the House right now to get some co-sponsorship. And right now we have the census, not the labor, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, has been going strong since 1948, says that the national youth unemployment rate rose to 19.1% in July of 2010. That's the highest it's ever been. And so that translates into about 4.4 million young people ages 16 to 24 unemployed nationwide.
Jay, can I ask you to tell me how you and Faye got together? And Faye, why don't you tell me about that too? Go ahead.
Okay, Faye, we met at an annual festival for CCC alumni, and it's every November at the Florida CCC Museum at Highlands Hammock State Park. And we met several years ago. Is that right, Faye?
That's right. I've been going to it now for about 10 years, ever since we moved to Florida. I live in Sarasota in the winter, and I always get there in time to go to this, so I've been going every year. It's very enjoyable.
Faye, you must have some good memories of those days.
Yeah, I do, because we were all in it together. Everybody that was up there, a lot of them were a lot worse off than I was, in that they sent the money, part of the money, home. Originally, it was $25, I guess. Yeah, $25 sent home to the parents to help the families. And that saved a lot of homes from being foreclosed, and it saved a lot of people from actually starving. People were. Children were malnourished very badly. And that was one good thing. And one example of that is that the boys that came to the CCC, a good lot of them were undernourished, and they all put on weight in the first few months they were there because we had good Army food. We made a lot of jokes about it, but it was good food, and it was nutritious. And a lot of the boys had never had square meals like that. The camp was run by, as I mentioned, by the Army, and so we had a certain amount of discipline, but there was no military training as such, and it was not intended to be. It did turn out, though, that practically about some 85% of the boys that had been in CCC were in World War II, but that was just an accident of history.
Jay, let me ask you, is there someone you're working with in Congress right now who's trying to move this forward?
Yes, there is. I just wanted to play something, if I could get it on cue. This is Franklin Roosevelt, and I hope that you can hear it. I'm going to play it as well as I can. Okay, here you go.
Okay.
It's very good to be here at these Virginia CCC camps. I wish I could see them all over the country. I hope that all over the country they're in as fine condition as the camps that I've seen today. I wish that I could take a couple of months off from the White House and come down here and live with them, because I know I'd get full of health the way they have. The only difference is that they've put on an average of about 12 pounds apiece since they got here, and I'm trying to take off 12 pounds.
Yeah, so anyway, this one's an intercede with that. I thought
nice
you would like
that. Nice touch of
history,
Jay. Nice touch of history.
That Roosevelt got along with, that's one of the first programs he brought. It was called the Emergency Conservation Work. It was the first alphabet soup program, but he called it the Civilian Conservation Corps in a message to Congress, and the press and the media caught it, and that's what the name of the group stayed throughout the program. The name was changed from ECW to CCC in 1937. And then Faye got into it when it was a CCC. But Roosevelt was a jokester. He with the media, and that was one of his more famous speeches with the boys back in 1935, I think, or 1933. After it was, they were still living in tents up in the Shenandoah. And then a few years later, he came back and he did another speech to open up the park to the people. And they also built parks, 800 state parks around the country, and dozens more of municipal facilities around the country. The metro parks that are in Cleveland, Ohio, that's like a ring of parks from Lake Erie to Lake Erie, like in a semicircle, encircle that city. And then there's parks almost in every city that was over a million population back then. And I worked on a park that was a million population, Pittsburgh. So
go ahead, Faye.
Yes.
I just wanted to mention that one of the City Parks is quite famous nationwide, actually, and worldwide, and that's the Red Rocks Amphitheater in Denver.
Sure. Beautiful place.
That's the, when the Beatles came to the United States, that was the first venue where they had their first concert. And it's still active. There's, and they just did some restoration in the last few years. We have a CCC boy statue there now. And there's always been a big plaque on the wall pointing out that that park, that venue, amphitheater, was built by a whole bunch of teenagers, several hundred of them, with wheelbarrows, dynamite, bulldozers, and front-end loaders, and pickaxes. And it took them about 3 years to do it, but it turned out great, and it's here there today.
Well, it sounds like the We Can Take It slogan worked out pretty good. So Jay, you were going to tell me, who in Congress is working on this today?
There is a bill. It's gone through some transformations. It was proposed in December 2009 by Representative Marcy Kaptur, District 9 of Ohio, and she's an advocate of the New Deal. She also has a bill out to repeal the Graham Act that repealed the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933 also, to put leashes on our banks so they don't go into speculation. So she's a member of the Banking, Budget, and the Appropriations Committee. And the bill is well written, and it follows closely the bill that was written by the Congress, the 77th Congress, that FDR signed into law on the 31st of March, 1933. And they put all together, I have some things I could read off to you if you want me to about what
Go
they
ahead.
Did. But okay, it's in their history. And FDR wanted to invest in human capital, and he in his first inaugural speech, he said, "Our greatest task is to put people to work. This is no unsolvable problem if we face it wisely and courageously." And then he used his famous, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself," in that inaugural. And then he ordered the Congress to come together on March 9th in a special session. And that was the beginning of, or as part of his first 100 days in office, and he passed 15 major bills into law. And one of them was to end prohibition, make everybody happy with beer. And that happened on the 7th of April of 1933. Before then, we couldn't even have beer or any alcohol. So that was one of them, and the other one was a class. So, yeah, he said, "I propose to create a civilian conservation corps to be used in simple work, not interfering with normal employment, and confirming forestry, the prevention of soil erosion, flood control, and similar projects. I call your attention to the fact that this type of work is of definite practical value, not only through the prevention of great present financial loss, but also as a means of creating future national wealth." And that's what he said at the very beginning, is, "I propose to create a CCC." So that's what the program was called after that, instead of the other one. And
you want to comment?
Yeah, sure. We might mention that most of the state parks in Florida were built by the CCC. Not only Highlands Hammock, which was their first state park, but Myakka River State Park, there's a whole list of them. And they built roads, trails, campgrounds, bridges, and everybody planted trees. There were, Jay, you probably remember, but it's something like 3 billion trees that were
Correct.
Planted. CCC. I was involved in that because my group was kind of the forestry group in our camp. And so every spring, you shut down every other operation and did everybody at all the camps and planted trees at the appropriate
wow.
time to get them started. And so I went back and visited the area I was in Wisconsin. And it was in 1988. I'd been there in 1940. And so it was a long time afterwards. And it was a real pleasure to see the forested hills that had been denuded prior to that, and erosion was setting in and really bad. And so we did do a lot of good up there. We made a lot of campgrounds and a lot of recreational facilities. In Michigan, where I'm from, they built beach houses and did a lot of stonework. I've been in camps, old camps, all around the country over the years. We've had an alumni association, you might call it that. It has other names. One of them kind of faded out because everybody was dying out. There aren't too many of us left. But there's another one taking over, and it's strong. And they have a national gathering every year, and I've been to four of them. And I've been out to one in the Black Hills, and there we saw the results of the campgrounds and things that they'd built. And also the one in Florida, they had one there. And I've been one in Maryland.
Hey, can I ask you a question, sir?
Sure.
I'm trying to picture, you know, the hard work of a 17-year-old way back then in the 30s. And I can only imagine how little must have been in their mind to think that investment of their effort, their sweat equity and the country's investment would provide so many years of satisfaction and beauty and utility. My goodness, what a great thing that was done. I'm sure you must be tremendously proud, as must all of the alumni, to think that your work has had such a legacy.
I certainly am. I wear a belt buckle. It's a very nice belt buckle built by a CCC alumni, which has CCC on it prominently. And I'm always having to explain to people what the CCC was. The generations of recent ones, they have no clue whatsoever.
Well,
if it was touched on in history, they were absent that day.
Well, unfortunately, too much of that important information is absent from our curriculum. Unfortunately, they're too busy teaching to test nowadays. Jay, let me ask you a question. Obviously, you're motivated by a variety of concerns. When between the concerns about unemployment and infrastructure, what would you say are your top three reasons that you're putting your energy into making this work again?
Okay, I have to go back, reiterate that the bill number, I forgot to mention the bill number from the bill, is the 21st Century Civilian Conservation Corps Act, and it's H.R. 494, and you can get information about that on our website at wecantakeit.org. The main thing is our culture is really different from the culture that Faye grew up in. Even the kids today, their vocabulary is less than what they had back then. A normal 17-year-old had about 25,000 word vocabulary. They could spell up, they could give the meanings, but today it's almost down to 5,000 to 10,000. Vocabulary. They're not as smart as the kids back then, but they're also opposite of what Faye was. He was thin and malnourished. Today, kids are overfed, and some of them are obese. That worries me about our national health, because they're going to be carrying on after us, and if they could get into a lifestyle early on in this program, right after high school, if they qualify for it, and if they're fit to do it, they could, get a healthy lifestyle and learn the ethics of the work ethic and the conservation ethic, and change our culture around and help people, the majority of Americans like back then, saw what the CCC was doing, and they would pick up a litter, or they would pick up the cigarette butt, or do something as minor as that, and keep the place clean and respect the outdoors, not throw the matches out and cause a forest fire. And then there's the job problem right now. A lot of kids are sitting on polishing park benches right now, trying to figure out what's going to lead them. And also college graduates too are looking for work. And so there's the whole gambit. And our veterans returning home, Roosevelt had that year before a bonus army that went into Washington. and General MacArthur chased him out, and that got him nominated. That one little incident in Washington in 1932 got him elected the next year, and he made a deal. Hey, I got a job for you, and put veterans to work. And this, the same bill, H.R. 494, also puts gives the first opportunity, the first first chance of opportunity for work is to those people that served our country, and reservists and National Guardsmen that are underemployed or unemployed. So those are some of the things I'm thinking about. And then maybe if we could get this CCC started in this country, we could, other countries will see, hey, you know, this is good for our country. And like the country of Haiti could start doing that and reforce their own country. And,
you know, I was thinking that very thing when you were talking about all those, all that planting, Faye. It made me think first of Haiti and all that deforestation that's taken place there and all the problems that have come from that. You know, it just seems like such a no-brainer that the kind of investment in both young people and in infrastructure. I mean, anybody who's gone to a park, who's gone to an outdoor show, has walked a trail, has gone camping, has benefited from that incredible effort. And you know, so much of it is unfortunately thoughtlessly abused. And we all know what the infrastructure is like right now. How many roads, bridges, etc., are in just such desperate need of care.
And our national parks are starting to suffer from not having perfect maintenance anymore, and because of budget cuts, so that they're starting to deteriorate to some degree at least, and they could certainly use an influx of the same kind of work.
Now, it sounds like a far better solution than privatizing, that's for sure.
Amen.
Yeah, there is a park out here in, where I live called Honeymoon State Park, and they were proposing to put in RV slots, about 45 RV slots, and the population of about 1,000 people went to fit into a small auditorium. So people are aware of having private, you know, they wanted to privatize, have somebody privatize that area to, you know, allow in RVs. And a lot of the parks around here, there's a lot of RV parks around here that would be undercut, and they came out too. So the business is against it, and also the public was against attacking the wilderness that is left in our own community. Pinellas County here in St. Petersburg is almost all concrete, and the little green space we have, we're fighting. I mean, the people realizing that this is what they want to keep, and also around our nation, what's going on with, you know, from everything from the pipeline that broke up in Montana to the fracking that's going underground, we don't know what's going to be up, you know, left for our youth coming up, and our youth have to have something, you know, in, for their future, and a program like this would get them in the right mindset to protect what's left.
Jay, let me ask you this. When our listeners come to your website, is there a membership? Can they join? Should they be writing their senator or their congressman? What are you going to be asking of your guests on your website?
Well, we're first trying to get seed money to it's like $400, $400 to $800. We're trying to get seed money together to get the money together so we could form a 501(c). So we're asking for donations before we could, you know, to apply. And we have that information. We have a donate button on there. But that donation block, we can't get to that money until we have the 501(c). So we're asking people to send us checks or whatever to the address there to help us out. You know, $10 or, you know, $5, whatever donation they want to give, and I formed a group, a committee. We have a board of directors now. We have a set of bylaws, and we have a mission statement that is on our bylaws, and on the website we can take it, and all that is on there, and our membership, and we're looking for. We're looking for people to be honorary members and contribute more to it. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to get the idea spread to all 50 states in the union and our 8 territories. And we have 330 million people there that have a voice, and that is, we have representatives that should representatives, either if they're Democrat or Republican or independent, they should look at this as a win-win for the people, and not for the, you know, not for themselves and not for their political entity. But I hope that next year in the 2012 election, this becomes an issue. The CCC becomes an issue, and also the other program called the WPA that was for older folks to have jobs, and they did a lot. They did about 8,000 parks, city parks and such,
and courthouses
around the country,
and schools and libraries,
and yes, and also they built. There was an FWA that did heavy construction that built our heavier bridges, roadways. And did heavy construction, like building the locks and dams on, from the Ohio River Valley down to the Mississippi and up to Minnesota, and to get barge traffic up and down those rivers. And my father was part of that group called the Federal Works Administration, and that was his name, Francis W. Alexander. So I kind of kidded him about that.
You found a home, huh?
So it struck home. So FDR... And then my older brother was FDR. His name was FD Alexander, so Franklin Delano Alexander. So hey, it's in my family. He passed 12 years before I was born, and he is one of my political heroes of the 20th. He's the best politician we had in the 20th century besides Churchill and Hitler and Tojo in that time period. FDR's programs still exist today, to the chagrin of some people.
You do want to have people phone contact their congressmen and senators now to push this bill that we've got going.
Right. I have on a section take action, and I have petitions online too that you could sign. And I'm asking you to call the Capitol switchboard at 202-224-3121. And when the operator answers, thank them and have them patch you through to your U.S. representative. And if you do not know who your member of Congress is, give the Capitol operator your zip code. They will find your representative and patch you through to the office. And if you're not their constituent, they could look at your address, and they could give you who your congressman is and then patch you through to your congressman. And your message to your congressman is, as your constituent, if you're a veteran, say that you're a veteran also, I want my representative to co-sponsor H.R. 494, titled the 21st Century Civilian Conservation Corps Act. The 20th Century CCC was never disbanded, but was a funding cut by the 77th Congress in World War II. Bring this program back and refund and reestablish it to create green jobs and to save our environment and our human capital, our young people, and our war veterans. For more information, you can visit wecantakeit.org, and then you just say thank you. And then I have two online petitions, and then I have a hard petition that you could have people sign, and then you could send it into your congressman. But the best way to get onto your congressman is just keep on calling his office, weekly, daily, monthly, just pester him to bring this program back. And if you want to, you could call up Marcy Kaptur's office and thank her for bringing this bill, onto Capitol Hill.
Could you spell her name, please?
Okay, it's Marcy, and then her last name is very peculiar, K-A-P-T-U-R. And she is the congresswoman, from Ohio. She's been there since 1983. And,
wow.
She's a very powerful woman on the Hill, and she speaks for the people.
Has some good representation, doesn't it?
Right. She represents all of the country the way she speaks out. She's very, very upset about, you know, the repeal of Glass-Steagall, and saw a lot of problems in the 80s when she was just in. She saw the bank bailouts of the savings and loans back in those in the 80s, and now she saw the, what's going on in 2008, 20 years later. So she is on the ball, and she's with you, and she has this great bailout that, will bring a program back that will help get a different mindset to save this planet. If we don't do something, we will not survive as a human species. That's what I think, too.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much, Jay, for coming on, and you also, Faye. We so much respect the work that you put in so many years ago, and I have to say, having enjoyed many CCC and those facilities come brought to us by you good people and the work of FDR, I just want to say thanks. The legacy that you did will live long, and let's hope that we have enough political leadership to harness that same kind of investment strategy so that the next generations can enjoy the hard work that's so needed today. Faye, do you want to wrap up with any particular comment for our listeners, sir?
No, I think we've about covered it all. One thing it does do is, in addition to all that, for the kids, a lot of them were for the slums of the cities, and others were from poor, hardscrabble farm people, boys. And it taught them to work as a team, which they had not had before because they just, well, they hadn't any experience before, really. And to take a little pride in their work and the pride in their ability to carry out that work. It was a learning situation.
Well, thank you so much.
I know I went in as a kind of a 17-year-old had no idea what the heck was going to happen to me, and I came out much more confident in my ability to meet the world.
Well, that's great. So you reaped a good harvest from that as well, then?
Yes, I did. Matter of fact, first year of college, my tuition was paid by the money that I saved while I was in the CCC.
Excellent. Jay, do you want to wrap up with any other comments, sir?
I just want to wrap up with a quote from Albert Schweitzer. And the purpose of human life is to serve and to show compassion and the will to help others. And I believe that the CCC would do just that.
Well, that's wonderful. Jay, if I could keep you on for just another couple of minutes, I would ask you, I know you've been involved in other important other important progressive work. I'll put it that way because I know you've been working on a variety of issues. You want to just talk a little bit about your own political activism?
Okay. I've gotten involved in politics back in the past 10 years. And since the war started, I've been doing Vigil for Peace since 2006 near the gates of MacDill Air Force Base, which houses CENTCOM, U.S. Central Command, and Special Operations. And we've been calling to bring the troops home for that many years in front of that, about a mile from the gates. So we don't interfere with anything that's going on with the military at the main gate, but we're about a mile above the main gate. And in November of this year, I'm trying to gather some activists to come to Tampa to be at the air show at MacDill and just have the message, bring them home, and hopefully have a little concert for peace and have a panel discussion with these activists at a venue in Tampa. So hopefully it will draw some attention and, we also plan to, other things too is planning this 501(c) to come out and help bring back the Civilian Conservation Corps soon. And the country needs some repairs on its environment and needs some repairs on its youth and veterans coming back home. Some of them saw some. I was in the Operation Just Cause about 20 years ago, and I saw some sites I wouldn't want to talk about, and they seen some sites too. And a program like this would help them get over their past, and then they could show that what they're made out of, and leave a legacy behind, you know, for future generations. So.
Well, thank you so much, Jay, for bringing this really wonderful idea back to life, and thanks for bringing Faye to us. Faye, thank you so much for all your contributions, sir. I just can't say enough. I just want to say thank you then. And Jay, thank you also.
Thank you very much, too, for letting us come on.
Okay, well, Jay, I'd be glad to have you back again, let you talk about it as progress is made, and let you put out the call again. Thanks again, gentlemen. You have a real good day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, friends, that was a wonderful interview with Jay Alexander and Faye calling in and talking about a resurrection of the Civilian Conservation Corps. It is a better world.
There's a better world coming. Tell you why. There's a better world coming. Tell you why. We'll beat them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world that's coming, I'll tell you why. There's a better world that's coming, don't you see. There's a better world that's coming, don't you see. When we'll all be union, then we'll all be free. There's a better world that's coming, don't you see. There's a better world a coming, don't you know, no. There's a better world a coming, don't you know. I'm a union man in a union war, it's a union world I'm fighting for. There's a better world.
Well, thank you for joining us. I want to mention that one of our past guests, Mr. Keith McHenry, from Food Not Bombs, has been arrested by the city of Orlando for the terrible crime of feeding the hungry. Our friends in Fort Lauderdale also are taking an awful lot of grief for committing that terrible crime, feeding the hungry. I know many of you hesitate from time to time when you see someone by the side of the road. They typically don't even panhandle anymore because they're afraid of getting arrested. If you can do something to help Food Not Bombs, I urge you, friends, take the time. Your investment in a better world will pay off. You know, once again, that Nobel Peace Prize winning community activist in the White House has assured the world that when they bomb Libya, it's not a war. And I'm sure somebody out there believes it. But I imagine if you were the ones that those big jets were flying over dropping bombs, might look an awful lot like a war to you. And when those intransient Republicans can't see any way to reduce the deficit that they generated except by taking advantage of the workers of this country, I know you're there to let the president know, to let your congressman know, that we must invest in our country. We must invest in our workers. We must invest in our college students, because how else are we going to have a world? What kind of future are we leaving your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, and their great-grandchildren? You have to think about this. This is not just a situation where we're thinking about today and tomorrow. We have to think about what's ahead and what kind of country we are leaving. I'm going to play an interview with Daniel Ellsberg that we took a little while back, and he's talking about comparing his release of the Watergate papers to the release by WikiLeaks of some of that material, whether or not Mr. Manning was involved or not. But here's Daniel Ellsberg talking about Private Manning.
Thank you all for coming. We have a great lineup of speakers, and each will speak for a few minutes, so lots of time for questions. Speakers will take about 20 to 25 minutes, and then after that, the rest of the hour will be spent with questions and answers. My name is Kevin Zeese. I'm an attorney who serves on the steering committee of the Bradley Manning Support Network. That's at bradleymanning.org. And I work on economic justice issues through itsoureconomy.us and anti-war issues through comehomeamerica.us. If you'd like to interview me or any of the speakers or have us on your program after the call, contact Matt Smucker. His phone number is 717-209-0445. That's 717-209-045. And his email is his initials jms@beyondthechoir.org, jms@beyondthechoir.org. A couple of quick updates before we get to the speakers. First, the trial schedule. The next step in the trial is known as a pretrial hearing, which is in Article 43. It'll be held in mid-summer. It'll be the first time we get a chance to see any of the evidence that the military claims to have against Manning. It'll be held in Fort Belvoir outside of Washington, D.C. It'll be a multi-week hearing, most likely. And after it's over, he'll be formally charged. This will be followed by several months of pretrial motions, and we expect the trial to occur in the late fall or early winter, perhaps in December. All the court proceedings should be open to the media and public. That's what the courts have said. That's what the court martial rules say. But the government may try to close parts of the hearing, claiming alleged national security violations. We believe that the entire court proceedings should be open to the media, especially after Manning's mistreatment over the last year and President Obama already pronouncing him guilty. A fair trial seems hard to achieve, and a secret trial will not be trusted. The public needs to see what occurs in all aspects of this trial. With the addition of the death penalty charge of aiding the enemy, Bradley's total legal expenses are now expected to be in the range of $170,000. The Bradley Manning Support Network, along with direct contributions to his legal fund, has resulted in more than $137,000 being put into a legal trust. There has been a lot of support for Manning. As of a month ago, thousands of individuals have donated over $287,000 to the Bradley Manning Support Network's defense fund. An additional 640 people have given directly to the legal fund, $62,000. Bradley Manning's lawyer, David Coombs, reports to me that Manning is doing well in Fort Leavenworth. It's a much more appropriate situation, the type of confinement he should have been in from the beginning. He is in a quad shared with three others, his own cell in a common area. He's allowed 3 hours of exercise each day, 1 hour outside. He has access to a library and has meals with the rest of the population. It took a lot of effort by the Bradley Manning Support Network, investigative journalists, the UN, Amnesty International, legal academics, and supporters from across the country and around the world to get Manning this basic fairness and end his abusive near solitary confinement conditions. At this 1 year juncture, we are at the point where the media and public needs to begin to examine what Matt Manning is actually accused of doing. I suspect as we do so, more and more will understand why many Americans see Manning as a hero and a patriot and want to see the charges against him dropped. In addition to our speakers, also on the call and available for questions is Jeff Patterson, who is leading member of the steering committee of the Bradley Manning Support Network and executive director of Courage to Resist. We'll be hearing from all the speakers, and then we'll open the call for questions for all the speakers. Now to our first speaker. Daniel Ellsberg is well known as the whistleblower who leaked the Pentagon Papers that showed the real reasons for the Vietnam War. More than any other person, Ellsberg has stood in the shoes of Bradley Manning. He faced more than 100 years in prison for leaking the Pentagon Papers. He was abused by the government during the pretrial process with his privacy invaded, and as a result, the charges against him were dropped. Like Manning, he is now considered by many to be a hero. Daniel, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Dan Ellsberg. I was the Bradley Manning of my day. I'm proud to say that because, like a lot of other Americans, if Bradley Manning did what he's accused of, then I regard him as a great patriot who served his country very well, and he's my personal hero. When President Obama was asked recently whether Manning, who's now sitting in on trial, as I was on trial 40 years ago, whether Manning did not do exactly what Ellsberg did, Daniel Ellsberg did, President Obama answered, by the way, the correct answer to that question is yes. President Obama's answer was no, it wasn't the same thing. Ellsberg's material wasn't classified the same way, end quote. True, the material I released was classified top secret, sensitive. The material leaked to WikiLeaks was at the most secret, and not the highest levels of secrecy anyway. So that difference didn't exactly make the point, I think, that the president wanted to make. He also said that Bradley Manning broke the law. Now, that was obviously grossly improper for the commander-in-chief, the president, to be saying that in advance of a trial in which the jurors would be military subordinates of his. He was virtually giving them a directed verdict, and other people no doubt will be commenting on that. But I want to, I would say, by the way, that in my own case, my charges were eventually dropped, all of them, for reasons of gross governmental misconduct that, as the judge put it, offends a sense of justice. And I would say that all the charges against Bradley Manning, including the military regulations he's alleged to have broken, should be dropped, not only for that statement of the president, but for the gross governmental misconduct of his conditions throughout this last 10 months. But putting that aside, I want to address a question that almost no one else has addressed, and I would say would understand properly, because I haven't been in my position of having been prosecuted under these same basic charges as Bradley Manning. I was the first, actually, to face charges for unauthorized release of classified information, and the first to be prosecuted under the Espionage Act, 18 U.S.C. 793, paragraphs D and E, which are the subject of the charges of the other four cases the president is pursuing against leakers right now, more than all previous presidents put together. The question is, did I break the law? If Bradley Manning did, I did, and vice versa. And the president obviously believes so. Most people would agree with the president that if Bradley Manning did what he's accused of, which is what I was accused of, releasing to the public truthful information that had been classified, that clearly a law had been broken. The president believes that, and I suspect that most of the people listening here, even my fellow speakers, many of them, and most of the journalists, and I could add judges or members of the public, think it's self-evident that if someone has done that, has released without authorization classified information of any sort, or retained it for that purpose, they've broken the law. That's wrong. It's the misunderstanding, I won't go into why it occurs, but it is widely, wrongly believed in that case. In fact, the situation there, the legal situation, is has been described as very murky, controversial, uncertain. It's very far from clear that any law was broken or should have been broken, that there should be such a law. Very simply here, there is in the U.S., unlike Britain, which has an Official Secrets Act, there is no Official Secrets Act in America of any sort that criminalizes any and all release or retention of classified information without authorization. As I say, almost no one realizes it, but that's the case. Congress has passed no such law, or had it signed by the president, or had it affirmed by the Supreme Court, ever, because it's been held as in violation of the First Amendment. It would put beyond public discussion far too much, far too broad a range of information that the public needs to know and deserves to know to hold its officials and their policies accountable. So in fact, the Espionage Act, which was used against me for the first time and now against Bradley Manning, 793, paragraph D, is not such a law. It was not intended as an Official Secrets Act. For 50 years after its passage, it was never used as such, not until my case in 1971. Only twice after that, since before President Obama, and now, strikingly, five times under President Obama so far. So there's a real change in attempting to use that act as if it were an Official Secrets Act. And I just want to close by saying that most journalists and members of the press and Congress don't realize what's at stake in this trial and the other ones. If Bradley Manning were convicted on these grounds, if the Supreme Court upheld that, which it should not do, it should hold those charges as applied unconstitutional. And indeed, Congress ought to rescind those charges because they threaten to be applied in such a case. But if they were to uphold that, then we would have an Official Secrets Act and no further unauthorized releases of the kind that Bradley Manning, if he did what he's accused of, did reveal to the public. And that means we'll know much less about the secret planning that gets us into wrongful wars. We'll have more likelihood of a Vietnam or in Iraq, or other wars that are avertible, unnecessary, wrongful, disastrous, of the kind that we're engaged in right now. And it's because he alone acted in response to his oath to the Constitution, I would say, to reveal that information to the public, if he did, that Bradley Manning deserves to be a great, great credit. Thank you.
Well, friends, that brings us toward the end of our presentation today. And I want to leave you with a few thoughts. Again, this is your news director of Progressive News Network here in Florida, Richard Spezak, and I want to acknowledge the good effort and hard work of my co-producer, Ms. Mickey Royce, and also our associate producer, Kathy Pagano. We have arisen again with a new flag, the New Media Network. But I want to leave you with this thought. Many progressives right now are faced with a terrible dilemma. We see the lunacy on the right. We see the theocrats. We see the proudly ignorant. And then we look at the gentleman in the White House, former junior senator, former community activist, former constitutional scholar, former labor supporter. And we see a person who has compromised and compromised and compromised and compromised. And it's my opinion, I'd like to know yours, that while I'm not going to vote for a theocrat, I just cannot find it in me to advocate for this compromiser-in-chief, this Nobel Peace Prize winner that never saw a war he couldn't join, who finds drone wars and explosions the way to help small countries across the world. I want to ask you, are you going to get out the vote for Obama? Are you going to go out there and walk the streets? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I ask you this. Are you going to work to get this guy elected again? Are you going to hold your nose because they don't give you any choice? Or are you going to make a choice? Are you going to join with progressives across this country who are going to make sure that the progressive voices are heard? Who are going to make sure that the progressive agenda is heard? Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining me today. And I hope you join me every week. And tell your friends, the Progressive News Network here in Florida, brought to you by the good efforts of the newmercurymedia.com. We're here to make sure the progressive voices are heard. We're here to make sure that you can hear the good news, that there's a better world to come in. You put your shoulder to the wheel with us. There's a better world.
There's a better world to come and tell you why.
And we're going to build it.
Why there's a better world to come and tell you why.
beat them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world that's coming, I'll tell you why. There's a better world that's coming, don't you see. There's a better world.
Join us this Sunday when Progressive News Network brings you Susan Booker.
There's a better world that's coming, don't
you have a good day. And make this a better world.
There's a better world that's coming, don't you know, no. There's a better world that's coming, don't you know. I'm a union man in the union war.
We'll see you next time.
I'm fighting for. There's a better world that's coming, don't you know. There's a better world that's coming, there's a better world that's coming.